I think that does it for housekeeping. We're now about 5 minutes after, so I want to go ahead and get started. I will also just say that a number of questions came in the registration process about how to do safely, things about rectal juicing practices that exist today. We're really going to focus a lot of our energy on thinking about rectal juices as microbicides. So some of these questions may or may not get answered. I will say for people, just to make sure we all understand what a rectal douche is, these things can be made of you can buy them commercially in stores, or you can kind of make them on your own, a homebrew, as it were. And they're used to clean out your anus and rectum prior to sex. A lot of people who have anal sex, or a good proportion of people with anal sex, do some kind of method to clean themselves ahead of time. And so rectal douches are a relatively common behavior, and it's why we think it could be, if we can create a douche that's safe and effective at preventing HIV, we would have interest from a number of people around the world. People ask questions about what would be a safer form of douche, or we do know that people use unsafe forms, so any kind of douche that has harsh chemicals in it, not a good idea. You can actually make your own at home using, just warm water, not hot and not cold water, just sort of room temperature water, and insert it with a douche bottle that you can buy these commercially, empty out the product in the douche bottle. Those tend to be a little bit harsher usually, and you can insert the water gently and expel it gently. You don't want to be forcing things up in there. You don't want to turn on your shower and put an attachment up your butt and turn the water pressure on high. You don't want to use a douche. You don't want to put into your douche bottle soap or bleach or anything like that. Just a little bit of water. If you want to be creative, you can add a pinch of sea salt. Douching should be done gently and carefully and safely, not go overboard. And when you're done, you should give your body some time to kind of heal from the trauma of that happening. Your rectal tissues are very fragile. So you wouldn't want to necessarily douche and then jump into bed and have sex right away. You want to give yourself time to, like, let those tissues kind of heal themselves a bit. So that's my quick douche 101. Without further ado, and not take up any more time, I want to start off by introducing Marjan Javanbakht from UCLA. UCLA has been a great partner with IRMA on a number of things over the years, and she's going to be presenting this morning on the prevalence and types of rectal douches used for anal intercourse, the results from an international survey, a survey that was conducted in collaboration with IRMA and UCLA and partners all over the world. So take it away, Marjan.
Great, thank you. Hello, everybody. It's great to be able to do this, and I'm thankful for the opportunity to present findings from our study on the prevalence and types of rectal douches used for anal intercourse. As Jim mentioned, this project was a collaboration with UCLA and IRMA, and it wouldn't be possible without the help of Jim and Marc-André, and, of course, all the volunteers who helped with the translations and getting the word out there about the survey, and basically the tremendous support we received to get this project going. So moving to the next slide, what prompted us to try to get a better understanding of rectal douching practices is the increasing evidence about the potential harmful effects of rectal products used for anal intercourse and the potential for these products to facilitate the transmission of sexually transmitted infections, including HIV. Some of the early evidence comes from the Nonoxynil 9 studies, which showed that vaginal application of N9 was associated with increased risk of HIV transmission. And then further studies looking at rectal administration of N9 showed that it was associated with sloughing or shedding of rectal epithelia or rectal cells, so certainly damaging to the rectal area. There have also been laboratory studies, in vitro studies, as well as animal studies that have demonstrated that some commercial lubricant products may damage rectal tissue. And why we think the hypothesis is that this damage to the rectal epithelium may enhance the probability of transmission of pathogens like HIV, as well as other sexually transmitted infections. In addition to some of this biological plausibility evidence that's been building, there's been recent epidemiologic data that show that lubricant use during anal intercourse was independently associated with rectal STI. Next slide, please. Beyond that, there are some clinical studies relating to enemas that have shown that some of the commonly used enemas can result in colonic irritation, colitis, and essentially rectal epithelial damage. In terms of epi studies, there have been a small number of studies, and these are older studies that were done in the late 80s, early 90s, that showed an association with rectal douching and HIV. And as far as I could find, there was one study that associated douching with LGV, which is lymphogranuloma venereum, as well as a study on hepatitis C virus, though there's very limited data in terms of other sexually transmitted infections. Next slide, please. What we know about rectal douching so far, that it is a common practice with anal intercourse. There have been a number of studies on this, and one of the more recent studies, which was a relatively large U.S.-based survey of about 12,000 men, found that about half reported rectal douching with their last anal intercourse event. Another study, which is a smaller study, about 100 men, again, a U.S.-based study, noted that the prevalence of douching in the past 6 months was about 64%. Again, this is with anal intercourse. There isn't much international data, but certainly evidence to indicate that there's geographical variation in the prevalence of douching, with the prevalence from a study in Peru being reported as about 27%. But little is known about the content and type of rectal douches used. Next slide, please. So our objectives for this survey was basically to explore a little bit more in terms of the specific content and types of products that are used for rectal douching, and then examine some of the practices and factors that were associated with rectal douching. Next slide, please. So this was an internet-based survey. It was a relatively brief survey that took about 10 to 15 minutes to complete, and it included information on products that were used, both commercial and sort of homebrew or homemade products. Both men and women were eligible to participate in the survey, though you needed to be at least 18 years of age and had reported receptive anal intercourse in the past 3 months to be able to be eligible for the to respond. And we were interested in both douchers and non-douchers. And the respondents were recruited through IRMA, which included advertisements on the website, as well as email messages that were sent out to a number of listservs. Next slide, please. So the survey itself was conducted up and running from August 2011 through May 2012. And it was available in 8 languages. We collected, including the English, French, German, Mandarin, Portuguese, Russian, Spanish, and Thai. We collected information on some basic demographics, general sexual behavior questions, as well as history of sexually transmitted infections. And then we practices surrounding anal intercourse, including douching. We prepared an image-based list of commercial products, and respondents could select from any of the products that were pictured, or they could add any product that wasn't pictured and they wanted to list as something that they had used, and that was for the commercial product. In terms of homemade products, we had some preset answer choices, so you could also specify if you used something that was not there, and we specifically included on our list water plus soap, water plus salt, and then again, you could put in your own homemade product that you may have used. Next slide, please. So what did we find? We had close to 2,500 people attempt the survey, though of those, about only 71% were actually met our eligibility criteria and could go through and complete the survey. And that's the data on those 1,700 or so that I'm going to be talking about today. The respondents represented 112 countries, though the majority were from North America and Europe. You can see we also had about 14% from Latin America, 5% Asia, and 3% from Africa. The majority of our respondents were also male, 88%, and most were less than 30 years of age. The mean age for our sample as a whole was roughly 37, with the range being 18 to 87 years of age. Next slide, please. So you can see here, this is the prevalence of rectocutane. So among the 1,700-plus respondents, about 62%, or roughly a little over 1,000, reported rectocutane before or after anal intercourse. So the majority reported doing so before, with 83% saying that they always or most douched always or most of the time before anal intercourse. And then 16% reported the same for after anal intercourse. Next slide, please. In terms of the types of rectal douches used, the overwhelming majority reported on homemade products, the smaller percent reporting on commercial products. And there was a lot of so basically everybody used something that was homemade, and then some people may have also used a commercial product. There was almost very little exclusive use of commercial products. You can see on the homemade product side, if the primary thing uses water, although about, say, 11% reported water and soap, close to 4% reported another product using another product, which included vinegar, coffee, lemon juice, and urine. On the commercial side of things, about 56% reported saline-based products, so you can see there were other products that were used as well. What's not on this slide is that more than half of those who said they used a homemade product said that they used a shower head hose or a sink attachment hose. And about 12% actually reported using plastic bottles, such as water bottles or other containers that weren't necessarily made for douching. Next slide, please. So here is the prevalence of douching by some of the demographic factors that we had in our survey. You can see that those who reported douching were slightly older, with a mean age of about 38, compared to 34 for the non-douchers. The prevalence of douching was also higher among men, 70% as compared to 32%. And there was substantial geographic variation in douching. We see the highest prevalence reported in Europe and North America, and it's lowest at about 40% in Latin America and the Caribbean. Next slide, please. In terms of the prevalence of rectal douching by sexual behaviors and STI and HIV status, we see that those who reported lubricant use had a higher prevalence of rectal douching, as did those who reported substance use with sexual activity. Rectal douching was also higher among those who reported having an STI in the past 12 months. And here our definition of an STI was a self-reported history of rectal chlamydia, rectal gonorrhea, or syphilis in the past 12 months, essentially. And the prevalence was also higher among those who were HIV positive. Next slide, please. When we try to adjust for some of these potential confounding factors, we did some multivariable analyses looking controlling for age, region, condom use, and amount of sex. some of the factors that were independently associated with rectal douching. Listed here, there's lubricant use, substance use, HIV status, as well as STI status. And just to interpret as an example, in the case of the lubricant use, the AOR, that stands for the adjusted arch ratio. This, the interpretation here is that there was a 77% increase in rectal douching when comparing those who reported lubricant use to those who did not report lubricant use. Next slide, please. Sort of the take-home messages of some of those numbers, what does it all mean? Well, basically what we found is, and this is something that has been demonstrated before, that a substantial number of respondents reported rectal douching, though the majority was before AI. But I would argue that there was a non-trivial proportion that also reported douching after AI. We found that water was the most commonly used product. And water is a hypotonic solution when compared to the rectal epithelium, which the implication here is that it would have fewer complications to some compared to something that's hyperosmolar. And the issue with osmolarity is that things that are hyperosmolar can cause the rectal cells to collapse and damage the rectal epithelium. So water, relatively speaking, is safer, although there have been a number of clinical studies of enemas that have showed that water has been associated with rectal epithelial damage as well. So this implies that it is not nearly as safe as something that may be isotonic solution, though the availability of isotonic solutions for douching is probably very limited, and certainly I don't know how you would create something at home like that. Next slide, please. Other products, including water and soap, the sodium phosphate, and laxative-based enemas have also been associated with colonic irritation, colitis, and rectal epithelial damage. And we saw that in our survey, these are things that people do use, although not quite as common as water alone. Next slide, please. To get into a little bit more of some of our findings, so we found that the prevalence of rectal douching varied by region. And this is partly explained by the fact that sexual practices may also vary by region. We did a parallel survey with Irma looking at lubricant use, and we saw a similar pattern with lubricant use in terms of geographical variation. We also noted an association with substance use with sex, and this may partly be explained by evidence which suggests that substance use, in particular methamphetamine use, may be associated with an increase in the number of sexual encounters and events, but also that certain substances can increase bowel dysfunction and constipation and may potentially increase the need for rectal douching. We also noted an association with sexual health outcomes, including HIV status and other STIs. The association with the other STIs is a novel finding from this study, but it does support some of the smaller studies that have already been done. And it lends support to our hypothesis that rectal products used for AI are potentially harmful and may facilitate the transmission of STIs. Next slide, please. Implications in terms of rectal microbicides. Well, certainly these findings support promise of acceptability of rectal douches as a delivery method for rectal microbicides, given that it is a relatively common practice behavior before receptive anal intercourse. And HIV prevention via rectal douches may fit into sort of a repertoire of behaviors that could be targeted to those who are at most risk. Also, there's a potential for the improved safety profile of rectal microbicides compared to some of the products that are being used now. So it would be kind of a double bonus, I suppose. Next slide, please. Rectal douching, so in sort of in, next slide. Rectal douching with AI, in closing, rectal douching with AI is a common practice, and because it's associated with other risk behaviors, the contribution to transmission and acquisition of STIs and HIV may be important. And other studies can help to further delineate the association with STIs and between an association between rectal douching and STIs and HIV. But this study is sort of a first step and provides important information for the promotion of better rectal safety and rectal health. And so with that, that sort of concludes this presentation. I appreciate your attention, and I'm happy to answer any questions that you may have.
Thank you very much, Marjan, for a really talk. We will take a moment now to see if there are questions for Marjan. Again, you can post them in the chat if you're online. You can also press *7 and ask them verbally. So we'll pause while you may be doing that if you have a question you want to ask Marjan verbally. While we're waiting, I'll just remind everybody that the paper associated with this presentation, also titled Prevalence and Types of Rectal Douches Used for Anal Intercourse, Results from an International Survey, has been published. It's available on the IRMA website. And these slides are going to be made available to you, so you can go back and refer to them. We do have a question in the chat. And it's from Mark King, who says he has a friend who douches using a shower shot for at least 30 minutes, as much as two to three times per week. So a shower shot, for those of you who may not know, is an attachment to your shower with a, like a little hose and a nozzle. He and his monogamous partner are positive and detectable. Is he risking damage to his rectum? He's done this behavior for years. I'm not a doctor, and I don't play one on TV, but I would say yes, he's risking damage. Using a shower shot for 30 minutes seems to be really over the top and intense. Those tissues are extremely fragile. And Marjan talked about, you know, like water-based lubes and douches that are hyperosmolar can disrupt the epithelia and cause damage. It's transient damage that repairs itself quickly, but even a simple lube applied gently and lovingly can cause a little bit of damage. So putting a hose in your butt and just running it for 30 minutes seems to me to be problematic. Now, he may have a very tough rectum that it's been, you know, he hasn't noticed any damage over all this time, but I, from my perspective, would be a little concerned about that. I don't know, Marjan or Jerome, if you want to weigh in on that, but that would be my perspective.
I would concur. I'm also not a doctor, and I don't play one on TV either. But I would also add that the damage is probably, when we talk about that damage, it's microscopic, or it might be things that you may not necessarily feel. So while you might think it feels okay and nothing, there's no problem, certainly the damage can be there.
Thanks. So we have another question in the chat from Pedro. Wanting to ask you, Marjan, how participants were invited to take the survey? What outlets were used to post the survey?
Jim, you may be able to answer that even better than I, but we partnered again with IRMA, and so there was a link on IRMA's website, so if you went to the website, you would see it. And then there were email invites that went out to list serves through IRMA. I don't know, Jim, could you expand on specific listservs or emails that went out?
Absolutely. Yeah, so this was a big part of what IRMA did. It was all online, offered through SurveyMonkey, and as you saw, it was in English, French, German, Mandarin, Portuguese, Russian, Spanish, and Thai. So through IRMA List and through all of our partners around the world, including folks at the Global Forum on MSM and HIV, AVAC, other lists that we were able to connect with, we circulated this. So that's basically how it got out. And some folks put it up on their own websites as a link or shared it through email. It was also shared on Facebook. We did a similar methodology when we actually teamed up with UCLA a few years prior to this on an international lube survey, which we also did in, I think, six languages. We had about 9,000 people respond, and it was really all through listservs, posting on websites, Facebook, Twitter, various blogs. So that is how it works. I thought I might have heard somebody coughing. So is there someone who wants to ask a question orally?
Yes. Is that Jim?
Yeah, so please tell us who you are and ask your question.
Hi, Jim. This is Simon Rosser. We know each other. I'm a professor at the University of Minnesota and the principal investigator of a similar study that was published last year. So the results are reliable. Essentially, they're similar to what we found in the U.S. My question for Marjan, the thing that freaked me out when I was doing the study is the lack of good research on the anal epithelium. We were only able to find one or two papers in the literature examining this. Mm-hmm. I'm wondering if you had the same experience or whether we're just missing a whole lot of research.
Yeah, no, you didn't miss anything. I also found it challenging, and most of the studies that I found were older, maybe from the 90s, 80s, and they were done in clinical settings. They were mostly studies that were conducted by nurses trying to figure out what kind of things go
yep.
on when they give patients enemas.
Yep.
And so this was only the only clinical evidence that I could find to support some of the things that we've been thinking about.
Right. We've got a team, just in terms of future research, we've got a team moving on this to take the research in the field further, because mm-hmm. it seems like this is a huge gap in essential research, that we don't understand the biology and the effects of the enemas on the anal epithelium when used by gay men for anal intercourse.
Yeah, very true. I think some work has been done certainly with lubricants in the biology. This could be extended to include douches, definitely.
Yeah, for me, I couldn't see, I did look at that literature and I couldn't see it. The problem for the field, Jim, and the problem for gay men in general, is that the work, the great work that is being presented here and our work, continues to warn us about the damage of using water-based things in the rectum. And I worry, as an HIV prevention researcher, that for 20 years we've been telling gay men that water-based lubricant is the way to go. And that was based essentially because it did not damage condoms. But I have looked for and can't find the research that says that water-based lubricant is fine in the anus. So our team has been a little bit trying to struggle with that one. And the results of these enema studies are going to be highlighting, well, ours and this one both highlight the potential danger of using water-based. And that's in direct sort of against what we've been saying for a long time about lubricant.
Any yeah, comments? Well, thank you. Yeah, thank you. As you probably know, IRMA has been carrying the lube safety issue as one of its main policy issues since we were formed in 2005. And that's one of the reasons why we did this global lube survey. It's to find out the most commonly used lubes around the world and then encourage researchers to test those, because there were early concerns from animal studies, lab studies. There's still precious little data on this. There's question marks, but nothing is answered. We're not sure if the transient damage that water-based lubes can cause has any impact at all on HIV
mm-hmm.
transmission or STD. We continue to push this. There is a little bit of data. We have our Marc-André LeBlanc, who's the secretary of IRMA, is our lube guru, and he has tracked and amassed every single study that's out there, and we would be happy to share with you that list. A lot of it is on our IRMA website, but we could send that to you and make sure, in case you may have missed one or two things.
Yeah,
or isn't,
that
as you know,
would be enormously appreciated.
We would love to, sure. And I appreciate your interest. And just know, and everyone on the call know, we continue to kind of beat the bandwagon on this. We're continuing to engage with partners from the CDC to the WHO to other normative bodies, the NIH, around lube safety. This is an issue we continue to think is important. We did a big sign-on survey last year calling for a global research kind of plan for lube safety, a roadmap, and we continue to do that. We continue to fight for that. It's been hard to get airspace on this issue, but this is one of the reasons why we exist as advocates, is to keep pounding the drum on this issue. So we'll send you what we have, Simon. If you can shoot me an email so I have your contact information, or I can probably find you, I'd be happy to do that, and then we can discuss more offline.
Sure.
So thank you. And then finally, and before we get to Jerome, and I want to do that in a moment, I just want to follow up. There's one more question in the chat saying, what's the deal with coffee? Would anything acidic like that be problematic? And is it cultural? I can answer the problematic part with a yes. I think putting coffee in your body, in your vagina or your rectum, is not a good idea and is not recommended by anybody. Coffee should most likely only go into your mouth and enjoy the wonderful taste and aroma that way. Whether it's cultural or not, I don't, Marjan or Gary, did we see anyone using coffee in other parts of the world that you could speak to?
I think, there weren't enough people to say coffee that I could look around for sort of variations in that way. But I think there are coffee-based enemas. Now, that's not, they're sort of formulated sort of like in a pharmacy, not necessarily your drip coffee coming out of your coffee machine, but they are used in clinical settings. And so I think this may have been an extension of that, the coffee enema. I would definitely not do it.
Are people able to get coffee enemas, Marjan, do you know, outside of like a hospital or a research setting?
I don't. I think it's more, it's sort of a something that you'd have in a hospital as a prescription-based type of thing. It's not an over-the-counter type of thing.
Okay. Thanks for that. Thank you for all the great questions and for that clarification on coffee. I'm enjoying a cup of it right now, orally, so I hope you all are too. Now, thank you very much, Marjan. She'll stick around, and if there's any final questions at the end, she can also weigh in and help answer. But now we'd like to move forward and invite Jerome Gallia, who is a longtime member of IRMA and was responsible for creating IRMA in the Latin American and Caribbean region. It's been based in Peru since 2008. And he is going to talk about some work specific to Peru and Ecuador. So take it away, Jerome.
Thanks, Jim. Hi, Marjan.
Hi.
And hi, everybody else. Thanks a lot for tuning in today. I'm going to be speaking today more from a qualitative perspective on some data that we uncovered here in Peru and also in Ecuador. Usually, about rectal douching practices, usually when we present studies, we talk about limitations at the end, but I'm going to break convention and just frame this conversation, this presentation, by saying that the data and the things that I'll be presenting in the next few minutes came from a much bigger study on the acceptability of rectal microbicides in these two countries, the data, it was not specifically a study on rectal douching or rectal douching practices, but it came up often enough that it caught our attention, and we published a brief report on it. And so I think in many ways my presentation is going to leave more questions than answers, but it's still worthwhile because, as was mentioned, there's just not a lot about this behavior at all, and to understand how it fits into as a pre or peri or even post sexual practice, and how it might be used as a rectal microbicide, we're going to have to do much more specific studies. So, next slide, please. just taking a step back and, again, frame the rest of this presentation, a lot of the data that's published on rectal microbicides and rectal microbicide acceptability comes from the United States. And the bigger study that we did here in Peru is really wanting to see, wanting to look at rectal microbicide acceptability outside of the U.S. And Peru, as in much of South America, is experiencing an HIV epidemic that is concentrated in men who have sex with men and transgender women. And this slide just really kind of shows you where we're at, where you have, you know, less general population prevalence of about 0.4, and men who have sex with men or sex workers or transgender women, it's much higher. Next slide, please. So in other words, it's like, you know, up to 50 times higher in transgendered women. And so these data are just from Peru, but are representative from really what we're seeing regionally. So clearly what we have now for HIV prevention down here isn't working well enough, and we need more options, and that's really where the exploration of rectal microbicide acceptability came in. And we need options, things like Truvada for PrEP, which is ironically tested in both countries, in Peru and in Ecuador, but at least in Peru, it's not available for either treatment or prevention. So that's another conversation, but I want to keep that story alive. But at any rate, rectal microbicides could be useful here, as in many places, as an additional prevention tool. Next slide, please. What we know is that there's now been substantial evidence showing that rectal microbicides would be acceptable in Peru and also in Ecuador if they were safe, effective, and affordable, and in a lubricant presentation. And so the question is, well, what about other presentations in addition to lubes, or for people who don't like to use lubes or want to use them with lubes? And incidentally, the paper right in the center of the slide, preparing for rectal microbicide social cultural factors, that is the large qualitative study that was done on rectal microbicide that just published a few weeks ago. And from which this douche data was extracted. Next slide, please. So I just wanted to say a little bit about douching in Peru. I don't have data from Ecuador, but from a different study that was published last year, among a little over 824 Peruvian men who have sex with men and transgendered women, we found that about a little over a quarter had ever douched. And amongst all survey participants, 80% thought that they would be willing to use a rectal microbicide douche if it, you know, prevented against HIV. And so, and what we found is that in that study, that those who had use a rectal douche were also particularly willing to use them as a rectal microbicide. So not too surprising, but that makes us confident to feel like if there were a douche amongst douche, a rectal microbicide douche amongst douchers, they would use them. Next slide, please.
Jared, can I just jump in for 1 second?
Yeah.
We're hearing a little bit of background typing, so if you've asked a question verbally or you have unmuted your phone, can everyone please make sure to mute your phone by pressing *6? So we have a nice clean recording and we can focus on Jerome's mellifluous voice. Back to you.
Thanks. Actually, I thought that was you typing, but thanks.
Maybe it might have been. I should stop. I actually haven't been typing, but anyhow, go ahead.
All right. So back to the study at hand. So the study, the large qualitative study, but also, and so by extension, the smaller study, it happened in 3 different cities, and it took place in Lima, which is an urban coastal city, the capital of Peru, with a population of about 10 million people. Iquitos, which is off to the right in the map, which is a urban jungle city. Actually, there are no roads in or out of that city. Population around 500,000. In Guayaquil, which is a large coastal city in Ecuador with about 3.75 million inhabitants. So we chose these cities largely because they were all cities that had active HIV prevention research sites. They all participated in the IPREC study, the PrEP study down here. And we had good collaborative relationships, and it made sense to kind of work the study off that framework. Next slide, please. So what we did is that we used pretty standard qualitative methods. We did 36 in-depth interviews, each lasting about an hour, 12 per city, and 12 focus groups, so about four groups per city, among an overall sample of 140 participants. And these participants were split out into four different types of potential rectal microbicide users, or people we thought that would most benefit from a rectal microbicide, or potential consumers. We broke them into these groups as they self-identified: men who said they were gay but they weren't really out. They were out enough to participate in the study, but not maybe out to their family or friends or coworkers. Men who had sex with men but did not identify as gay. Men who were sex workers that may have identified as gay or not, and transgendered women. I'll just say that there's a lot more about these four different groups in the papers we've published. These are clearly not mutually exclusive groups. There were some out gay men who sold sex, or some transgendered women who sold sex, or sex workers who were gay, but these were just kind of the four rough groups that we had centered on. Next slide, please. Which reminds me, Pedro asked about recruitment for Marjan study, and for this study, we recruited these participants at community centers, volleyball courts, hair salons. We didn't use internet recruitment, but it was more like field-based recruitment, again, through these study sites that had already had active recruitment going on. And this slide, it says framework analysis. I just want to say that this is the methodology that we used to analyze the data. I won't go into depth, but it's just to say that it's very kind of cyclical process where you read all the data. The overall data set had about 600,000 words, so it was humongous, and it was processed using the Atlas TI data, and basically we familiarized ourselves with the data, as themes emerged, we charted, mapped, and it was kind of a very iterative process until we sorted out the actual themes. And through this process is when I noticed, because I did the primary coding, that rectal douching was something that came up. Next slide gives you an idea of the participant characteristics. I just mainly wanted to show it here that participants were fairly evenly distributed across the cities. I don't show it here, but they were also nearly identical represented amongst the four different groups. Since we prospectively recruited that way, it was not at all random. But that Lima, not too surprisingly, since it's a really big, very urban city, also is a little bit older and a little bit more educated compared to the other two cities. Next slide, please. And so here's some of the data. So we split it up into kind of pros and cons, what people thought about rectal douches if they could be used for a rectal microbicide. And so these are just some little nuggets that we pulled out. One guy said, this was a MSM. So when I say MSM here, it's from all the non-transgender groups, basically. So this person said, it could be accepted due to hygiene. So people who use douches for hygiene might be more likely to accept a rectal microbicide in a douche presentation because they're already using it. Another person says it kills two birds with one stone. Basically, I can take care of the hygiene, but I'm also protecting myself at the same time. This last person says the ideal type would be an enema, something that's going to have more effect. It's going to go deeper. Again, this isn't represented in this data set, but in the larger data set, one of the concerns that came up about rectal microbicides in a lewd presentation was, well, how's it going to cover your whole colon? You know, the sperm's going to travel up high. And so this particular person really thought that, well, you know, the good thing about this is that it is going to provide that extra coverage. Next slide, please, onto the cons. So a few things that came up were dryness and impracticality, this person says. More than leaving you cleansed, you end up really dry. You don't have anything from your body to lubricate. In the end, your partner is going to be uncomfortable. Another person says, regarding practicality, sometimes there's no time to put on a condom, much less apply an enema. The next slide has a few additional cons that came up. Remembering again that, you know, the study didn't really focus, it didn't drill down onto these. These are just really things that kind of came up when you just asked the question, what do you think? This person says, so you're going to have a huge tube. You're going to carry it around with you, aren't you? On the other hand, you carry condoms in your pocket or a lubricant as well. And then the final nugget here is douching is, and this goes back to something Jim was talking about a little earlier, douching is forcing something in your anus with force. Because when you do that thing, you flush, the flushing, use the enema forcefully, and so that it does the cleansing, right? And that's extremely harmful to our health, says one transgendered focus group participant. Just when we, next slide, when we looked across things that, again, what people mentioned they had used, so we didn't do a survey on what people used, so I can't say whether, you know, we did have a checklist, yes or no, did you use this or that? These are just things people came up. So coffee didn't show up here, but things like lemon juice, tap water, soap and water, camphor, vinegar, soap, bleach, and alcohol, there's a mixture that can't be doing any good. Detergents, shampoo, and consumable alcohol, these are things that we detected when we looked across the surveys. Next slide will show the apparatuses that were used. There were store-bought enema kits, but and I can't really tell you about frequencies here. I will mention that the study that Marjan presented, we're doing a more focused version of that study just in Peru, and we'll have data coming up, not on this call, but in a future paper. We just have the data. But these are things that people use, soda bottles, hair dye bottles, so you empty out the dye, and then you can fill it up with the solution you'd like, and syringes, not with the needle, I hope, but taking off the needle and then having that as a plunger-like. So the next slide, you know, what do we make of this? Again, I think it raises some interesting questions. There's interest in rectal microbicide douches, rectal microbicides in Peru and rectal microbicide douches. There are some caveats. Who would these be best targeted to? Only people who currently douche or others as well? But I think it also shows that there's an interest in a range of product presentations, but we don't have enough information to know would they be used together, separately. We're just not there yet, and we need to drill down deeper. But regardless of rectal microbicides, I just think that douching needs to be further explored, and I agree with the previous conversation. These product or solutions that are being used here, the ones that came up, you know, they're acidic, corrosive surfactants. Practice may be causing more harm than good. Next slide. Another take-home message for me was that, you know, douchers, I think, when they use it around sexual intercourse, there is this kind of interest in being clean and disinfected, but really it begs the question, why? Was this something a partner was requesting that happened? Was it something that people wanted to do? Is this kind of like an example of indigenous rectal microbicides? You know, when you use bleach, the idea is to kill something. Is the idea that it's killing the bugs, or maybe killing the bugs for my partner, my insertive partner? We just don't know. What about the alcohol use? Was that for cleaning, or was it to get drunk? So I really feel like, in addition to the rectal microbicide conversation, that we do need to just understand the cultural context of rectal douching and then see how that fits into an HIV prevention strategy. But it certainly needn't wait until there's a rectal microbicide. These things need to be looked at now. So the next slide to wrap up, here's my real limitations. So this is a small qualitative study embedded in a larger study. These are small sample, really, 140 people. Pretty young, overall educated participants, so important to keep that in mind. But good data to leverage the next study. So the next slide. Going back to the original question, are douches ripe for further exploration? I guess I'll leave the answer. I'll answer that, caller. Yes, they are, and they should be now. One last slide here, actually, is to the acknowledgments. I do need to, of course, thank the study participants. And this is a research team down here, including Janie Kinsler from UCLA, Cesar Nareña, who's a Peruvian anthropologist with whom I've worked a lot, John Emery from UCL, Jorge Sanchez from Impacta, and Billy Cunningham, also from UCLA. And this was funded by the UCLA AIDS Institute seed grant. And the final slide is the paper, and is also mentioned on the final slide. We can get that to you if you'd like it. Or you can also write to me. There's an error in my email address. Sorry, it's at UCL. So thank you. That's my presentation. Jim?
Thank you very much, Jerome. That is really fantastic. And I think, you underscore a really important point about not only douches sort of ripe for exploration for a rectal microbicide application, but just in general. Just like we have become very interested in lube use in general, it's not just because lubes could be a rectal microbicide delivery mechanism, which we hope they will be, but lubes on their own need to be researched. We need to better understand their impact. We have been telling people to use them all these years, and what does that all really mean in terms of the real world? So I think there's a lot of research that needs to be done in both of these areas, and certainly I think if we look at the amount of data we have for lubricant safety, which isn't a whole lot, we have even less in terms of douche safety. So so everyone on there who is thinking about writing grants and doing scientific work, think about douching. Think about douching today. So we have some questions that have been posted in the chat. Also, you may ask a question verbally. If you want to do that, remember to unmute your line by pressing *6. While you're thinking of your questions, we will go to the chat. Pedro has a couple of good points. So the first thing, Jerome, if you could further describe how you characterize race and ethnicity in the demographics and how relevant you think that is in this study, especially in these Andean cities.
So these categories, that's a good question. This is something Pedro and I have talked about years ago. These are the standard categories that were agreed on by the group of researchers. They kind of also fit into the standard categories that have been used in a lot of other research down here, but people self-identified. So always a little suspicious when people self-identify as white. Here, but people completely self-identified, and this is how they self-identified, and that's how we grouped them. What was the second question, or was there only one?
I think that's just how relevant do you think those classifications are, I guess, would be considering where the study took place in these various Andean cities.
Yeah, I mean, I guess they're relevant in as much as, these are how people see themselves. And so regardless of how we may categorize them or how relevant we may think, these are the categories people self-chose. It's kind of just like, when people select a sexual orientation, what's probably most important is how people self-identify, especially if we're going to be targeting people based on any of those characteristics. But you can also find So I think they're relevant to that extent. Although, I mean, I think probably, I mean, Pedro, you feel free to kind of chime in or speak on this. I would say probably it's more likely that people were mainly mestiza. But to the extent to which it's useful for grouping people as they self-identify and reaching people, I think they're relevant. But that's probably about as far as I would go.
Cool. So Pedro had another question. If you could, you brought up an idea around an indigenous rectal microbicide.
Mm-hmm.
Can you just speak a little bit more about what you mean in terms of an indigenous rectal microbicide?
Sure. I mean, by indigenous, I mean something that already, hopefully I'm using the word correctly. So if I'm not, this is what I mean. I mean that it already exists. That people that these solutions may already be even in a context where rectal microbicides don't exist formally as products that have been developed for that purpose and marketed and used, that people may be concocting solutions and not calling them rectal microbicides, but using them in a way that does basically what we want rectal microbicides to do. Kill or prevent bugs. So they may be using it for either, we don't know. And that's what I meant by the term. No one has instructed these people, as far as we know so far, on how to mix these solutions or which solutions to use. It's not like there's any guide that says, mix bleach and alcohol and detergent and put it and use it rectally, and that'll prevent an infection. But it appears that people are, because these are products you have to purchase to mix, to use. So they're not accidental, whereas tap water I could see to be cleaning, but when you start adding other chemicals, there's some thought behind that, and maybe that thought is prevention.
Hi, this is Pedro again, and I know that we are over the time, but the thing is that when this theme came out, you were saying that there might be like the rationale in their mind that could be used to prevent HIV infection, but I wonder if actually it was to keep your rectum clean so you do not transmit any kind of bug to your partner that is inserted. So, I mean, I completely get it that there is the idea of being clean inside, but I wonder if it's like an HIV prevention rectal microbicide, or it is just a cleaning process so you do not, I don't know how to say that in English, ensucias your partner. How do you say that?
So your partner doesn't get dirty or get infected,
right?
Or yeah. No, I totally agree. We don't know.
Mm-hmm.
We don't know.
Okay.
But yeah.
So I just wanted to have clear if you meant the indigenous RM by for the participant itself, for the receptive partner itself, or for not do not make your partner be dirty or whatever. Yeah. Thank you.
This is Simon. There's two papers that have explored the reasons for using rectal microbicides by gay men in Alex Caballo-Diegas' research and also in our paper that we published last year. There is a huge, it seems like the biggest and most common reason is that guys don't want to get shit either on their partner's penis or have the embarrassment of that. But there is evidence about, particularly with the guys who are using enemas after sex, that they are doing it as an HIV prevention strategy. They're believing that this will help prevent them get infected.
Thank you for that, Simon. Are there any final questions for either Marjan or Jerome before I take a moment and wrap up and let you know about an upcoming Loop safety call?
This is Mark Hubbard from Nashville. Can you hear me?
Yes, please go ahead.
Okay, so just a couple of comments, and I totally agree that we need a lot more research. I just want to make some observations. I wonder, and you know, I'm sharing this in hopes that it would illuminate questions asked on a survey or further research. The association between being HIV positive and rectal douching, I would want to explore whether that has to do with GI upset due to regimens, particularly ritonavir-containing regimens. In my experience, that's what I hear reported in the community. And so I think that's really important. And I think it would also be important to ask people about, beyond whether they've had an STI, what kind of network they're a part of or what kind of sexual behaviors they're into, because my experience in the community is folks report douching before, not just one-on-one sex, but in particular before visiting sex venues and that kind of thing, and I think that would be really interesting to probe as well. I think the fact that the shower shots or the shower nozzles are very highly used, that reflects my experience, is really important to explore. I think sometimes that is particularly used by this population of folks and the population of folks that are into particular fetishes like fisting. And so it might be interesting to look at that. That's all I have.
Thank you for your comments, Mark. As always, spot on, right on the money. Anything you want to say to that, Marjan or Jerome, before we close?
Yeah, one final comment, and I want to ask Jerry. You started in one of your slides, the third, I guess, saying that there is a market for rectal microbicide, at least in the index. But what I read both of your papers, and the thing is that I feel I have the sensation that there is no market for it. I mean, I feel from what you report in your paper that people are more than reluctant of using that. But what do you think about that?
I'll just quickly say, and we can talk more later if you want, Pedro, but people are reluctant around rectal microbicides that are too expensive or ineffective or are dangerous to use. If they're not those things, then there's a lot of interest. So it's a mixed bag. And I don't think it's shocking either. People are going to want things that actually work. But that's how I temper that message. You're right. You're right. And so if we have a rectal microbicide that comes out that's maybe only 50 or 60% effective, which would still be huge and still be able to blunt some certain epidemics, we have to think very carefully to whom they're marketed and how to reach those people.
Okay, thank you.
Yeah.
And the work continues. So I know there is some interest that was expressed today on the call around lube safety. And as you know, we've been doing a lot of work on this. We actually have a call scheduled on June 4th. So keep your eyes peeled. We're doing it again with AVAC. It's called The Latest on Lab Tests, Lubed Monkeys, The Latest on Lab Tests, Lubed Monkeys, and Lube Using Humans. And it's going to include researchers from UCLA, our colleague of Marjan's named Pamina Gorbach. We have someone from the CDC, and we also have a researcher physician from Annaba Health Institute in South Africa who just published a really interesting paper where they did some lube safety testing on commonly used lubes in South Africa, both commercial and kind of homemade products and kind of organic products. So they tested egg whites. People are using egg whites for lube, and so they ran some lube safety tests on that. So those three will be on a call with us, in addition to Marc-André LeBlanc, who will be updating us on some advocacy that's been happening and been ongoing with PEPFAR and WHO. So please stay tuned to that. That's June 4th. The email will go out on the IRMA list and through a number of other lists for more particulars. I want to thank both of our wonderful presenters today, Marjan and Jerome. Thanks very much for sharing your time and your interesting data. Thanks again to AVAC for providing us these capabilities and to Julian for making the trains run on time and without any technical glitches. So many thanks. And also to the Global Forum on MSM and HIV who they were really critical in helping get the word out on this call And they were also very involved in helping us with the translations, actually, for the study that Marjan talked about. So I want to give them a special shout-out on that. With that said, enjoy the rest of your day or evening, and we'll all be in touch soon. Thank you very much. Goodbye.